I just jump into it. So this is going to be a little bit of a bonus episode for explaining some of the terms that we have come up with. No, not that we've come up with. We didn't invent these. Hi, I'm Tom Board Games, and I invented board games. I'm
pretty sure I was the first to use all these terms.
What's that, Justin? What?
Yep.
Copyright, TM. Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of terms that we've said in previous episodes and stuff that we will use in future episodes that are probably going to confuse the shit out of a bunch of people. So what we've decided to do is sort of compile a list, and we're gonna go through some, not all, I hope. That's a big list.
Definitely not
There's
all.
There's a lot of weird terms.
There's
a lot of niche terms, too, yes. Or overlaps.
So what happens when you get a bunch of dorks together.
Man. Well, everything needs to have a buzzword nowadays, right? Welcome to marketing. Buzzword.
This is an action real-time worker placement strategy extravaganza.
Right, and I've there are people out there in the audio space right now listening that are like, "What the hell does that mean?"
So what's the first thing on your list there?
The first thing that I feel that we should talk about is the difference between an American game, also known as an Ameritrash game or an Amerithrash game.
I've never heard that last one.
Yeah. You've never heard Amerithrash?
No.
Those are the people who are trying to be gentle and not upset the Americans when they're like, what do you mean trash? What the? America! Shotgun, beer, bald eagle, F-14 flies by. Exactly. And then the other,
look at this guy just alienating our listeners. Holy shit. Burning some bridges real
it's
fast.
No. Everything in me not to say what
he's
I'm thinking.
He's saying
for the win. Go ahead. I'm ready.
He's saying that that's why someone would not use such a term.
That's right. You don't want to upset them.
Oh.
These definitions do not reflect our political views.
That's great.
You don't want to upset the people with the F-14s. I can get by on that. Yeah.
That's right. And then on the other side of things, there are Euro games. Which don't have any other.
What do you mean on the? Oh yeah,
I mean, the other major category.
The other major category.
Right. Yeah, it's
they
not
are
a
fairly
it's,
different.
It's not a spectrum, though. You make it sound like it's a spectrum. We don't want to get into some sort of left-right kind of thing here, okay?
Mm-hmm. Oh no, we've gone political on the podcast.
Oh no, it's happened already.
Welcome to the collapsing game shelf political podcast.
It has literally taken everything in me not to bring up politics after your little Ameritrash speech.
I'm glad you didn't.
Seen as though it's,
I think that's,
it is currently July 5th.
There are millions. No, there are many.
You don't need to know that.
There are many, many, many political podcasts out there for you guys to listen to. You don't need to hear politics from us.
Leave your reviews with them.
That's right.
Wait, no. If you have reviews for us, leave them with us. But just cut marker. That's how this works, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry.
Well, no, don't be sorry.
Ameritrash.
Yeah, Amerithrash. It's a catch-all term.
Eurobash.
American-style games, right?
Eurovision.
So what is the definition of an Ameritrash? What does Ameritrash mean to you, Justin?
For me, generally, it's a game that has a lot of awesome theme and a fair amount of randomness. And, it's just got a great presentation value. It looks like a game that's fun.
Oh my God.
I was going to say, are you going to.
That's a terrible explanation.
Are you going to ask what Ameritrash means to me too? Because I'm going to be super excited if you get to ask me.
Okay, Debbie, what does Ameritrash game mean to you?
Death.
Wow.
Seriously, it is.
You can't see her putting on the black eyeliner.
It is all about
spiked choker,
combat, and killing people.
I don't know if combat is necessarily true. I think more conflict.
Direct conflict?
Direct conflict.
Yes. It is absolutely like, there's no, it's not PvP, it's not co-op, it's nothing like that. It is like,
now we have to explain those terms.
Oh my God. It is each man for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, short form, PvP is player versus player, which just in itself just means that there's going to be conflict between yourself and another player of the game. And then what was the other one? PvP, and then there was something else you threw in there.
PvE.
PvE would be like player versus enemy or player versus environment. It's something more geared towards a cooperative game style where you are battling the game as a group as opposed to battling each other.
Which is the same thing as co-op.
But I mean, we're really steering off course here of what What is Ameritrash? What is Ameritrash?
Bring this boat around.
Yeah.
What is Ameritrash?
Tom, what's Ameritrash to you?
Do you want the... I don't have the dictionary.
I
want
to know what you think.
Yeah, what does it mean
to you? To you?
What do I think? And then there was 12 minutes of silence.
Don't worry, you can edit that out.
It's good pod, everyone. I can't. Oh, I have the power. Yeah. I mean, along the same lines, I think both of those are pretty correct. I think it's not as valid as a term as it used to be. I recall that American style games used to be like there's just like a shitload of cards and you get a shitload of dice and sometimes they have like different faces on them and there's just a lot of stuff to play in. Usually the boxes are huge. They usually have more. They tend to, or they used to have more theme than substance to them. So one example, I can't remember which one it was. I'm trying to think of the example. What was the one where you go around collecting treasure across the world? They did a remake of it. But you would basically go and you'd pull up a card and it's like, oh, there's a treasure in some place. You'd like, oh, I'll spend a turn. You go fly over there and there's another card. It's like, oh, there's a boulder. And then you have to roll some dice. And did you get by the boulder? Yeah, okay, here's another card. And then at the end you get like a gun or something. You shoot somebody. It's just like nonsense. It's just shit happening all the time. And it takes like 2 or 3 hours. You're always like getting in each other's way. That's what I think it's all about. But I do think it's like an older thing. Because I think the two big styles of sort of kind of like... I'm making motions like two people hugging.
They've
come together a little bit.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of overlap. I guess we don't want to put this as a rigid spectrum.
It's definitely not.
Because I think for me, my classic example of an Ameritrash game would be Last Night on Earth.
Okay, yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a classic. It's set in a B-movie zombie theme, small town America setting where you have your human players as just random like drifters or the high school sweetheart or something. It's just heavy on the theme, and then the zombies control the zombie horde. So it's semi-co-op, I guess, but it has a deck of cards that with each expansion only gets higher until it's about 10 to 15 centimeters of cards.
Sorry, what's that in freedom units, please?
Divide by 2.14.
Isn't 2.14 pi?
Sine, sine, cosine, sine. 3.14159.
I've been out of school for much too long.
Just round down. It's just three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the deck of cards is just this random assortment that's going to throw stuff out where it's like all of a sudden it's like you lose your turn or there's landmines all over the field so all your zombies blow up or you just found a grenade launcher or you just, you know, it's just a random thing where you have no idea what's going to happen next turn. Whereas... with a Euro game, Adam, what would you expect?
Well, so first of all, before I tell you what I expect, a couple examples, I think, other than Last Night on Earth, because, I mean, Last Night on Earth is probably one great example, but people probably have not heard of, some people might not have heard of that.
It's fairly niche, I think, despite its popularity.
So are there any other examples? I'll throw out the obvious one of Twilight Imperium. I think that...
Carthage.
I've never actually played that one.
Rune Wars.
What's the other Fantasy Flight title with the spaceships and you're attacking the planets?
StarCraft?
No.
You're not talking about Forbidden Stars, are you? The one that's like Warhammer themed?
No. I'm talking about the one where you each get a random alien.
Okay.
And you have your like three planets and you
Cosmic all your, Encounter?
That's the one.
That's a great game, too. I friggin' love that game. I definitely feel that that does fall under the American style generally.
Yeah.
I think that's one that definitely kind of blurs the lines between American games and Euro games, which we will discuss
shortly.
Very shortly.
Regardless of like whether these things are, I think one of the main things is that in the past, you would start with a theme. So you're like, I want to make a sweet zombie game. And then you'd build stuff based on that. So it's like, that's where the deck of cards comes in. And Last Night on Earth, it's like, well, I need some way of like people finding stuff. Okay. Well, we'll just have like a deck full of weapons, but I also want them to sometimes just like fall through a hole. Well, we'll just throw that in the deck of random shit that shows up. So I think typically like the way it would work is American style games would be like, what can we do to make, like, we have a theme, or we have an idea of what we want this thing to look like.
We have the StarCraft IP.
How do we make this? How do we make this exciting? And I think that's kind of how those ones get built, is they start with, I want to make a zombie game. I want to make a game where you're trying to take over the galaxy. I want to make a game where you're trying to do this. And then things build like from the sort of from like the top down, rather than what we're going to talk about next, which I think goes from the other direction. Right.
One more thing I think that is pretty worth, and it's at least I feel it's a major part of an American game, is player elimination. I think that a lot of American games come with progressive player elimination, whereas Euro games tend to have everybody involved all the way from start to finish. That's another thing that I feel kind of really, really defines an American game. So on the other side of things, so the alternative to an American game, although like Tom said, it's very much becoming blurred in that middle ground, right? Like the two styles of games are very much starting to come together. But I think some of the things that really define a Euro game is, like I said, players being there from start to finish. And by saying that, I mean players being there from start to finish, as in no player elimination.
At least physically.
They may be losing. They may be losing horribly, but they have to stay there.
You make them watch. So what?
Sorry, as a caveat, so we didn't actually ask Adam what his opinion was on Ameritrash. That's because Ameritrash is not Adam's style. So the reason why Adam is giving you his synopsis on Euro games and not asking everybody's opinion is because Adam is the be all end all, like Einstein of Euro games, because this is his thing.
He's our Euro game union boss, and he's trying to like push them on everything.
That's right.
Trying to push his objective.
Bring the Euros.
Confederacy forever.
Give us more Euros. Give us more Euros. The things that I think define a Euro game are that the final, like the determining factor of who wins or loses tends to be victory points in one way, shape, or form. Right? It's who has collected the most of X thing. Mm-hmm. And generally you could translate that into victory points regardless of what sort of name they slap on.
Yeah, there's a clear ending objective or a clear way to track the winner kind of in real time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So barring secret objectives that a lot of Euros will pull in.
Of course. Sure.
I'd say the big thing for a Euro for me is that they tend to be softer. They're not necessarily violence driven typically, and they're engine builders.
What's an engine builder?
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, okay. So,
well, it's a person that goes out and builds an engine, Adam.
Oh, perfect. Oh, thank you.
So
thank
the you decisions for the decisions that you make, you're constantly building on your decisions to create a well-run machine. So when you're talking about Agricola
is a good Euro.
Agricola is a good example, is where you start out slow, but you build your engine, right? Like, so you start creating things that are going to pay out in the end, and they're going to give you continual return, and you build on that, right? And so it's not, I find Ameritrash is very like, I make my decision right now for right now, as opposed to Euro is, I have to think
20 turns down the road.
Yeah, like you got to start building that engine now, because there's not a whole lot usually that you can do right now that is going to make a like drastic change in your game. And I could be wrong, but that's
I agree.
That's my thought.
Just as one little point, like I think for some people, engine can be confusing. Another term I've also used interchangeably.
Don't think that my explanation helped.
Yes. Economy would also be an excellent kind of term to substitute, just because, you know, you build up your economy. Maybe you start with just making bread, but then once you get your bread business going, you can start growing cows.
Vegetables. Yes.
Yeah, well, depending on what beef. Kind of game it is.
Oh, this is lovely.
Yeah, so it's a builder, right? Like you've got to you build on top of everything that you're doing, and that what you've done previously kind of continues to pay out for you, and that just becomes you know, the foundation, and then you slowly build on it. So
I also feel that, like, in Euro games, a lot of times dice are substituted out and more card-based stuff is brought in.
But what about wargaming?
What about wargaming?
It got its start in old Europe. Does that fall under the
European style game? I think it's definitely more American style board
games. Wargaming styles?
Wargaming's like you're talking about games like
Axis and Allies?
I'm talking like the full on like simulation style like wargaming.
I think that's its own thing, just
third category.
Sure.
Yeah. But Tom, like what is Eurogaming in your
well, for me, it's like, again, I think all the things Adam says is right, but like you say, it's proactive as opposed to being reactive.
Look at you.
Yeah. In the dictionary. Thank you. Yeah, I pulled the dictionary out.
Thesaurus.
Found the pronunciation guide on Wikipedia. And yeah, so proactive, not reactive, which is more the style of exciting games. Again, it's like you start off with a solid idea of what kind of game you want to build. So I'm just looking at it. Azul, you know, you have this idea where you want to build up patterns in a, you know, there was clearly this idea of, you know, pulling tiles off and putting them in a row and making that allow you to score a bunch of points and stuff. And then, okay, well, what works well with that? Let's just stamp this thing about making a nice, what is it, Turkish?
Like a tile mosaic?
Persian?
Possibly.
Tiles, yeah, like a tile mosaic, like laying tiles
Portugal,
in a
right?
Portuguese.
Yeah, it's Portuguese.
I've offended a whole ton of people.
Sorry, man, we are alienating people from this podcast left, right, and center.
I just couldn't remember what it was trying to represent, but that's kind of the thing. Is like it's
actually based on the King of Portugal's visit to Alhambra in southern Spain, which would be the Moors.
So I've got it all wrong.
Okay, so we're all over the place. Yeah.
Regardless.
Or the Moors? I don't know.
Look.
It doesn't matter.
Keep that
for
your...
This isn't a history
keep
podcast.
Keep that for your history podcast. That's exactly. So you start with some idea of what kind of mechanics you want to do. So you have this fun idea for, this is a cool way to build a game. I have this idea for a game, but I have no theme for it. And then you sort of just like... slap that on at the end.
Paste something on top.
You find something that sort of fits. You know, Agricola is, again, you know, it's got some cards in there, but, I mean, it could have been about, and it has been turned into about everything. Like, they started off with Agricola, where it was about farming, and then that sort of turned into Caverna, where it's kind of farming, but there's also jewels and dwarves involved.
Dwarves!
Yeah.
Who doesn't love dwarves? Medieval, get your medieval on.
Yeah. So there's a lot of games, and that's what I think of when I think of like a Euro style. It's like it usually has solid mechanics. You don't have there's not a lot of random junk happening,
or at least not excessive randomness.
Well, Agricola, you can opt to take it out. It's also usually very modular. Like you can play without the random cards that let you be a certain type of person, and instead just run with what's called the family game.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is the most pure experience of Agricola, where you don't have all that other bullshit in there.
And who wants to play family game? Like, let's be realistic here.
Family games are almost their own entire category. Well,
it's just like, yeah. But that's what I think of when I hear that. It's like, okay, so I'm probably going to be playing. Someone says like, we're going to play this game. It's a Euro style. You know, we're going to have a game where the rules are going to have this cool system to them, but you know, the theme is often or not just going to be sort of tacked on at the end, or you know, some sort of thing that is going to fit well but obviously wasn't or may had not have been part of the original design, right?
Mm-hmm. Got any good examples of a Euro game without turning around and just staring at any game in my collection?
And besides Caverna.
Yeah, besides Agricola and Caverna, because those are both good ones.
I mean, Settlers of Catan.
Absolutely.
Carcassonne. Yeah, I like bringing that up because you get to see Justin furrow his brow, sort of go, Carcassonne. I mean, any of the ones that I first started playing when I got into board games, because you start off playing Monopoly and Sorry as a shithead kid, and then you realize that, there's actually games that you can play that don't suck. And
don't generate huge amounts of anger.
Monopoly,
cheating.
Especially. God, man, the fights.
Yeah. those are kind of there's a whole bunch. I mean, there's like Lahav, which I don't like.
Power Grid.
Five Tribes.
Yeah, so there's lots of them. Many.
Oh, so many. Oh, so more every year.
Never, yes.
The train never stops.
Pity the fool who tries to keep up.
So it's interesting that we kind of brought up Azul in just talking about Euro games, as I think that another term that could kind of sort of be used to discuss a game like Azul is Azul definitely kind of dabbles in the abstract game category. Now, at least from my opinion, an abstract game is a game that just like makes you think outside the box, where the theme has little to like absolutely zero connection with what you're doing.
I think one example that everyone will know, even though it's not a board game, is Tetris.
Tetris is an abstract for sure.
Set in a weird
like a
Russian
game, right?
Yeah, it's a weird Russian theme with blocks that fall from the sky and you got to match them.
Yeah.
There's no armies moving around. There's no real world connection, but it is, yeah, a puzzle game.
Yeah.
Chess is another one that I think of when I talk about abstract games. In the fact that chess, I mean, it's just, you like, so many people, nearly, if they're listening to this podcast, there's a very good chance that the people who are listening know the rules to chess.
Yeah, I think it feels to me like it's hard to grow up not knowing about chess or like checkers, those
sure.
very basic board games, those really old ones.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Chutes and Ladders?
No, just complete side note because I'm an idiot. I apologize. One other kind of big thing about the Ameritrash Euro game thing.
You just
sorry.
Won't let it die, will you?
Wow. No, I won't let it die. Is interaction. So interactability, there's a huge difference in interactability between the two.
That's a good point.
But I'd say probably one of the biggest complaints that I ever hear about Eurogaming is you literally could almost sit in a completely different room as the people that you're playing with, because you do not talk to the people that you are playing with. You build your own game.
Not about the game, at least.
Yeah, not about the game, for sure. And
please talk to your friends.
Yeah, like it's
about
but
RuPaul's
it's,
Drag Race.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah,
no.
But that's it, right? Like, because you don't want to, you don't tell anybody else what your like what your thought process is. You don't ask any questions because, I mean, why give away your strategy, right? Because it's like a race to the finish line, essentially, right? Who can get there better and faster?
Because yeah. It's funny.
Yeah, so that's a big piece about, a big complaint about Eurogaming is that you can walk into a room and know that people are playing a relatively Euro-based game because it'll be much quieter and much less animated than an Ameritrash game. An Ameritrash game is much more, it's very interactive.
I threw cards at Justin at least once.
It's true. Axis and Allies.
I'm not proud of it, but it happened.
But I think that that's a big thing. So I apologize for cutting you off, but I think that that's something important to kind of bring up. And apparently I'm a little slow today.
That's all good. That's all good.
I lost my wine. It's on the floor. I blame it on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. It was probably my fault.
No, you're good.
Sorry. So abstract. Oh, and abstract gaming is when I get to bring up my favorite game that everybody in this room hates.
I hate this game.
I don't hate it, but I wouldn't play it.
I don't hate it.
I don't hate it. I just don't. I don't get jazzed about it.
Yeah.
Oof, man.
Dicks it. It makes people mad though. You like thinking outside the box.
Abstractly, are, almost.
Yeah. Exactly. If you like,
the art is actually really nice.
Yeah. So if you're like that kind of like that artistic-y esque kind of person, Dixit is your jam. And you can at me if you don't agree with me, but Dixit Abstract 101. Adam is clenching his teeth.
Of all the abstract games that we could discuss, I cannot believe we're actually discussing this.
I mean, I would almost put that as more of a party game, but I mean, it's almost too quiet to be a party game.
True.
It's almost too sullen. Just sitting around.
Only sometimes.
Sitting around realizing that none of your brains can like link up in any way, shape, or form.
It can produce some hilarious moments when people are just like, I can't believe you guys didn't get it. It's so easy.
That's pretty much every single round of Dixit, Tom.
It's like It's it's like that scene in Mallrats where the guy is standing there staring at the 3D picture. For those of you who grew up in the 80s and 90s, you'll know this, where, you know, he's standing there just staring and staring at this picture. And then another person in the mall comes by, looks at it for about 5-10 seconds and says, "Oh, it's a sailboat, you dummy," and just walks off. These are the moments that you get in Dixit, where it's like, man, I put out all these cards and spun this yarn about like what this card meant. And I can't believe you picked anything but my card because my card was so obvious. And you're like, no, it was not. It was like, who knows what? It makes no sense whatsoever. God.
And that's like, I think that's Mysterium. So Mysterium, I think, was the... attempt at taking that abstract game and bringing it into a more interactive...
Something that's functional, something that like actually plays.
Has a point.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, they try to like, you know, everybody can talk. Okay, sorry. We're talking about Euro and
we're talking about abstract.
We're on point here. We're on point.
You're doing good.
The point is that they don't tend to make a lot of sense.
Abstract games.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be rules and you're going to be trying to do something for a goal that maybe doesn't fit what any of the theme is. It's just.
Or if there's a theme at all.
Right. Blocus. Is it Blocus or Blockus?
I think it's Blockus.
Probably Blockus. Like Blocus doesn't make a lot of sense because it's all a bunch of blocks.
Bunch
right?
of blokes.
Unless there's a bunch of blokes hanging around. But then it's just a weird Euro game.
It's a really
weird
game.
I was
going to
say, is that not like a UKS type?
Yeah, a bunch of blokes.
That's the Ameritrash version of Blockus sold to the UK.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Reskinned.
Right.
So what about another thing? Because we have brought up stuff like Agricola, stuff like Carcassonne and
Catan,
right? what do all of these games have in common?
Justin,
players,
gateway games.
Ooh,
right.
You picked up Catan, so I thought you knew exactly where he was going with that.
Yeah, they're all considered gateway games. Now, I guess when we talk about gateway games, we're really talking about games, and like I know that I've had it in my head to use the term gateway game, but then just haven't because I was kind of like, well, I don't know how this is going to go over. Like, I know that a lot of people will get it, but I also feel that a lot of people won't. So a gateway game is...
Ticket to Ride.
Yes.
It's a game that has an easily accessible theme that everyone can understand. For me, this is my personal definition.
I think you're bang on so far.
Go on.
Simple rules, simple concepts.
Sure.
You don't have to read a 50-page manual
and go
over the combat dice rules and counter tactics. It's just, yeah, so it has to have just a nice, simple, easily accessible thing like Ticket to Ride. It's got trains.
Absolutely.
It has very simple gameplay. What do you do with your trains? Well, you just put them on the board and you make the longest track.
Trying to connect point A to point B.
Yeah. Generally, they don't have any direct competition because you don't want people to get angry. And they generally have a decent amount of chance so that they can't be mastered. Like Catan, there's strategies involved, but because of the dice rolling, you can't really master Catan because there's a certain amount of randomness to the world placement and the dice rolling. Same thing with Ticket to Ride. You're drawing random trains. So there's no real way to always get the train you want. So you can't really master that. There's strategies involved. Like there are certain things, but there's no like, this guy's played it 10 times. He's going to win every single time. Because you don't really want that with a gateway game.
Absolutely not. Another term I tend to use for gateway games are entry level games.
Yeah, entry level. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just, at least to me, it's games that are easily approachable. It's like, it's that next step. Right? It's that next step when you're done playing
Monopoly.
For God's sakes, just take your Monopoly board, throw it in the trash, don't go back to it. Please, people, we can move past this.
But it's the cutthroat game of capitalism.
I think there's a different kind of gateway game for every...
person? Group?
No, for every different kind of function. Like every... what's the word I'm looking for? I feel like Thomas will know what I mean. But like, so you guys will hear this a little bit later. There's another game that we, that you guys will hear, like I said, later on. That's Menu Masters. And Menu Masters, for me, is a gateway game, but it's a very particular type of gateway game. Like, it introduces you to a certain mechanism. That's the word I was looking for.
Oh, it's like teaching mechanics is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. So each, I think that there's a different, it's not like, so yes, you have your kind of your quintessential gateway game, which is kind of Catan, I think, is the one that comes to mind for me, like no matter what. But then I think that there's different classes of gateway games. And they have, right, like there's one that gets you into the idea of let's sit around and let's play a board game where you actually, like, you have to think about something and has some quality to it. But then there's gateway games that introduce you to mechanics and certain things like that. And so there's different kind of, I think there's different levels to gateway games. That's it. That's all I got. Sorry.
Yeah. I can't think of, I imagine that there has to be ones. Yeah. For each kind of like a work placement gateway game. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Worker placement gaming game would be like Agricola is a prime example.
See, I would not
that one yet, actually.
I would not consider that a gateway.
Yeah, that one I'm seems thinking, a little more. Hold on.
I'm just going to take a look around. I don't know which one we're talking about.
What, like Five Tribes?
No. Five Tribes is definitely not a gateway game. No. My God, no way.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's got a good theme. It's nice.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I think Takenoko is a good gateway game.
I think Five Tribes is confusing as shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Five Tribes is
confusing. Yeah, no, that one was great. I won that one.
Yeah, no.
Because you won it doesn't make it a gateway game. Also, we've been playing board games for years.
No, I think that's... I agree with you. I think Five Tribes is actually... It's a very... I feel like Five Tribes is a gateway for planning.
Control,
like
planning?
Turn planning, right? And having like... And seeing... all your kind of your possibilities, right? And looking beyond the right now, which is funny because you said Five Tribes earlier for Ameritrash.
No, I did not know. Five Tribes is a Euro game and through. It is
as
Euro
like,
as it comes.
I thought you said it was Ameritrash. I was
No,
I wouldn't think about that. Tom, you look like you have
I looked it up, but I don't think it's a... We were talking about worker placement. I kind of... Yeah. Was it worker placement?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I couldn't think of an example of a
placement gateway. I don't think I got it.
Okay.
I was thinking Kingdom Builder, which is like very easy, like matching up colors and putting stuff on a board.
Yeah.
It's not a worker placement.
I don't know.
And the worker placement, the other one that I'm thinking is Viticulture, and that is...
That one's not overly... I mean, lots of people gateway. Do use it as an entry-level gateway game.
That's great.
Lots of people do use it like that. Yeah. I think that it has... I think that on the surface, yes, it could easily be a gateway game, but I think that there's a lot more depth there just waiting to kind of be unpacked.
But like, you can have a lot of depth, I think, in a gateway
game. Oh, sure. Well, yeah, sure.
But I think Viticulture is pretty good in theme.
Yeah, Viticulture is great.
Especially for an older audience.
Yeah.
Maybe don't break it out with your 5-year old. They won't really understand a lot about making
wine. I think it takes
wine.
Away the complexity of things like Caverna, where you have to pay attention to like
keeping your kids fed.
Well,
ooh, rip.
So essentially, yes.
Dark.
You may have to eat the donkey that lives in your house.
Yeah. Like,
no, you don't want to do that.
It takes away the excessive components, I think. Like, yes, it's a really big board and it has lots of cards, but it takes away the like, I need to go and get wheat and carrots and like, do you know what I mean?
You
like
can,
it takes
you can,
away all those components that I feel like some people get overwhelmed by over tactility, like just too much little stuff. I feel like if it's in concept and kind of in one place, then people tend to get a little less overwhelmed by it. And I think Viticulture does that well.
Now, another game that I think that we've kind of glazed over that, again, is another one that I feel very strongly is a very strong gateway game, is Pandemic. I think Pandemic has all the makings of a game that is, the rules are simple enough to pick up and play with relative ease, even if you're not a seasoned board gamer, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. I think that that the theme is nice and that, you know, you're all working together. It is a co-op game, which, I mean, I don't think we really need to talk about what a co-op game is, right? No. I think a cooperative game is pretty self-explanatory.
The theme is nice? The whole world's being overridden by disease. That's
okay,
not
the
nice
theme is
accessible.
The theme
sounds
terrible. The theme is accessible. The theme is accessible.
But you don't want the world to end? What are you talking about, Tom?
Only on the weekdays.
As long as my building goes down that I work in, right?
But one thing that I will say about Pandemic that Pandemic does kind of like suffer from is another mechanic that's, well, another buzzword that's talking about. Yes, it's a great segue.
Are we going through all of these?
No, we're just like, I think that this one is important.
We're failing the 15-minute line.
Well, obviously. I feel that it's worth
15-minute segments? Sorry for constantly interrupting.
That's okay. I feel that another one that Pandemic really showcases is quarterbacking. And what is quarterbacking?
Thomas?
Well, that's when the quarterback does his thing.
He calls the shots.
He calls the... Well,
calls the ball?
Well, doesn't the coach calls the shots?
I don't know a lot about football.
So the coach tells the quarterback what to do, and then the quarterback is responsible for telling everybody else. But he has the ball, so he... Wait.
Wait a sec.
Right. Quarterbacking in board games is when someone is, whether maliciously or otherwise, telling everybody what to do.
That, yeah.
Is that...
Yeah.
Like, they may not be doing it out of being mean or anything, but like if you're the most experienced person in a game of Pandemic and everybody else has never played it before, you can't help it. People will look to you to say, what should I do? And you might just start telling them what to do and telling them what the optimal thing is. And that's an example of what we're talking about.
Yeah. And I think quarterbacking can be a good thing as a teaching tool, as long as you give people maybe an option. Don't just tell somebody what to do, because then they're not really engaging with the game or having fun. You need to kind of temper it. If you're doing it as like a teaching tool, like in something like a co-op game in Pandemic, you know, someone asks you, oh, what should I do? Try to give an option like, oh, you can go here and do this or here and do this. Don't just be like, go here, do this. Because then it's just you playing the board game and your friends are just there along
moving
the ride.
Pieces.
Well, yeah. And I think that another piece of whether it be intentional or not, I think a part of the quarterbacking is I know what I want to do. So I want you to do what is going to optimize what I want to do. Right. So I have this ability and I'm a medic and I can, you know, make things better and easier for people. In order for me to get the best bang for my buck out of my turn, I need you to go over here and do this to either get out of my way or to make it easier or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so it's, I find that it often becomes the quarterback tends to do the most work, right? And they want to be the most successful to bring the team to success, quote unquote.
Yeah. And I think that's when it can start coming into being like your alpha gamers or something.
Yeah.
Where it's someone who wants to be the winniest.
Yeah.
And
that's
why it can be a problem in co-op games because, you know, you're supposed to be there cooperatively. Mm-hmm. It's not your show. You can have your moments to shine, but you want to try to make sure everyone's actually engaging and having fun. Otherwise, you're going to lose all your friends.
But I think it's good that you bring up the winningest winner, because that is something that I think we have mentioned before. And I think that it's a good mechanism that has been brought in to stop quarterbacking, right? Because what it does is it gives everybody... So the winningest winner is basically the game is based as like the team wins or the game wins. Like you either win or you lose essentially, right? But then over and above that, every individual is given their own personal objective. And so the team wins, but then once everybody wins, then it's like, okay, well, now that we've beat the game, of all of us, who managed to actually get their objective, right? And yes, you are guilty. Guilty, Justin.
the most guilty.
So the winningest winner actually, I think, curbs quarterbacking, right? Because all of a sudden people are like, oh, I have my own objective that I need to get as well. So fuck you.
Yeah, it gives you a reason not to listen to the quarterbacker.
Right.
Yeah. All right, were you talking about Gloomhaven?
Gloomhaven is another one that can potentially suffer from quarterbacking.
It can, for sure.
Less so, but yes.
Less, but because of the secret objectives or something.
Right.
Yes, but I'm actually thinking Dead of Winter, because I think Dead of Winter does that really, really well. Like, I think that they make it so that you're... Because Adam, actually, we played this, a month ago. And Adam, we had a group objective where it was like, you need to get all the food in there or whatever. And so we're all sitting there going, okay, like, get your food and put it in the thing. And he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then at the end of the game, who's holding a boatload of food? Adam, because he wanted to be the winningest winner, right? Yeah. Like, he had an objective that he wanted to get to. Yeah. And I think that was probably my first introduction to the winningest winner.
And I won that game.
He did.
For the record.
He did. But thank you, Tom.
Right on.
Because you are the one that introduced me to that.
To
the winningest winner or Dead of Winter or?
Both.
Yeah, it's also sometimes called, that's a concept called semi-co-op, where everyone's sort of working towards one thing, but everybody also has like a secret side objective.
Oh, you mean the winningest winner is not the right way?
No, you can trademark that and put that on a shirt.
Woo!
That's it. That Collapsing Game Shelf podcast, winningest winner, coming to Patreon near you.
Oh, wow.
You too can be a winningest winner.
Yeah. I think that at this point we've probably covered like the major ones, the ones that I guarantee you will come up
the most soon, often.
The
for
most
sure.
often
maybe
for
not,
sure.
Maybe not the winningest winner.
Maybe not the winningest winner, but I mean
depends what we end up playing, but
And I think that some of the other ones, like if a buzzword does come up that like is something that we have not discussed here, we'll probably take a quick moment and discuss it. I think out of the major concepts, I think we've hit 95% of them.
And I can't think of
another one off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's one out there.
I will try to take responsibility for, because I do try to do that to stop everybody every once in a while, because I am by far the newest addition to the gaming world of the four of us. And so I do try to keep it in mind that, you know, there are people out there that haven't been playing them as long as these guys have.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do try to do that. But, you know, with that being said, if there's stuff that you guys hear or questions that you have and so on and so forth, send them out. And I'll get them and I'll bring them to the table and I'll say, hey, guys.
Whoa, do we have to start doing Q&A segments?
Feedback sessions?
Feedback segments, feedback episodes.
I think that's probably not a bad idea, because like a little peek back at what's happening right now is that we have a fairly long runway for what's going on. Yep. Not as long as I'd like, but we have a long runway because I have a job and I don't have time to do this all the time. And so we have a bunch of episodes in the can, which means that we may not get to your problems or your questions or anything like that before the next episode comes out. So if you do have anything, please get in touch with us and we'll maybe try to do these sort of things more often to try to address some of that in a way that is a little bit more expedient.
Yeah. Because I mean, there are plenty of concepts. Like we kind of covered the highbrow ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Then, we covered the big ones, but I mean,
beyond that, you can get
the list
into,
of
like,
concepts.
What are the lowbrow ones?
Well, not necessarily like lowbrow.
You
brow,
mean the
but...
high concept? You don't mean highbrow.
Like, yes. Did I say highbrow?
You said highbrow.
You did say highbrow. It's the real.
It's because the proletariat are trying to keep us down.
but there's those things like what you guys were talking about
not
earlier.
The proletariat.
There's 4x or something. I don't even know what that is. Like there
four
is
4x.
We're not.
There
getting
are
into
things
that.
That they these guys talk about that I don't even know. So I'm going to try to avoid them.
When we start playing Empires Age of Discovery. Then we will definitely bring up the concept of 4X.
Yeah, because I mean, then we
or
can
civilization
4X worker placement. There's tons of just
dexterity
games. Types, dexterity games.
Yeah,
but
adult
the
party.
High, yeah, party.
Adult party.
What?
Not adult
just,
party.
Dude. Not just party, but an adult party.
I mean, there might have been a comma, but you know, maybe not. Sometimes.
I don't think I have any of those.
Oh yeah.
Hope that doesn't come up on the fucking.
But I think we can try to. address those as we come across them.
Okay, so memory 101, sorry, I just cut you off. So the closest thing I think you have to an adult party game is when we played Anomia.
Oh, Anomia.
Anomia out at the cabin, and your parents were there, and we played the X-rated one, and it was, that was bloody hilarious is what that was. That brought up some things that... You don't exactly expect to be, you know, sitting in a cabin with your friend's parents talking about. It's very funny, for the record.
If they weren't so tired, they probably would have joined in.
Probably. And it would have been that much funnier.
Dirty, dirty old people.
Everybody likes a dirty limo.
So there are adult games. We don't necessarily mean, you know.
No. Not that I've come across.
Not of the triple X rated, but strip more poker? Of the like R rated.
Yeah, that's it. Not reviewing strip poker, that's for sure.
Nope. Yeah. You guys, I mean, you, the three of you guys, sure. I'm out.
Twister.
Naked Twister.
Naked Twister.
Naked Twister.
Anyway.
Great party game.
I think that's about all we're gonna talk about for this short 50-minute segment that we've managed to churn out.
It's a good thing we didn't start alphabetically.
Probably. If you decide you have some feedback specifically for me, you can hit me up at Twitter at @TeamRageTom. I don't think Justin has anything yet.
No, I'm still the resident Luddite, but you can still get a hold of me via the the email. Can I just restart the Twitter?
No.
We have a Twitter at CGS Podcast.
I'm still the resident. I'm just gonna stop.
He's got nothing. So at CGS Podcast is the Twitter if you want to, I don't know, for some reason, talk to Justin. Or Hello. You can talk to Debbie at Mrs. Wynn, MRSH. Shit.
MRSWHYN.
That's right.
And then there's the team one. So as Tom said, we're at Twitter. We also have a an email address, theclapsinegameshelf@gmail.com.
Which is also in the feed. So I put it on all
oh,
the
Oh, yeah, that's right. I
episode.
Did see that. So there you go. Mm-hmm. And I will be paying attention to that.
And checking out the comments.
Yes, absolutely. I'll be looking at the...
Please make some comments.
At the reviews, stuff like
this
that.
This is now... Yes, I got it on Apple Podcasts and Google Play, and just addition to the website.
Yeah. Nice.
And I will
Which
filter.
I should probably mention, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. Hold on. Quick, cover for me.
Yeah, the collapsinggameshelf.com.
No, Adam, where can we find you?
If you are looking for me, you can find me on the Twitch box, www.twitch.tv/forthewin, forthewyn, Twitter @forthewin, or my website, www.forthewin.com. The website also will have a link, or should have a link at this point, to the podcast.
Fantastic.
Yeah, the website's thecollapsinggameshelf.com.
That's the one.
Yeah, and it'll take you to... Podbean or wherever the hell I've stashed this thing.
Yes, it's the Podbean.
That's thecollapsinggameshelf.com.
There you go. So
make sure you give us some ratings and some comments.
Like, subscribe, and bug Debbie about your comments.
I will filter them. Anything that is mean, I cannot bring to the table because it will hurt Tom's feelings.
I'm a sensitive boy.
Very sensitive. Oh, don't hurt his feelings.
You're friends with Adam. I don't know what you're talking about. How can you be sensitive?
That's true.
The salt cannon here.
Wow.
Ooh. Oof.
Wow.
Jeez. I get told that I am like the Dead Sea, so you can be the salt cannon. Nonetheless, love you guys.
You guys are weird. All right. Thanks, and we'll hopefully hear from you soon.
Bye.
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 Bye for now.